Lloyd with Morgan streaking. She's checking the goalkeeper.
The pay disparity between the men and women is just too large, and we want to continue to fight. The generation of players before us fought, and now it's our job to keep on fighting.
The pay cap for the women's Major League Soccer players is 11 times less than the pay cap for men's Major League Soccer. 11 times.
Rapinoe gets a crossing. It's towards Wolfman.
You're listening to Give and Go with Rotas Wadera, only on Girls Soccer Network.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to episode 72 of Give and Go. I am your host, Rotas Wadera, and thank you so much for making the choice to listen to us at Girls Soccer Network. Again, for all the latest and greatest from the world of women's soccer, we've got you covered at www.girlsoccernetwork.com. Check us out on Instagram at Girls Soccer Network or on Twitter at Girls Soccer Net. You can check me out on Instagram as well at ROWINDATAS25, Rowan DeTas, and that goes for my Twitter handle as well. If you want to get in touch, you want to reach out, you want to follow back, you follow because you're a fan. I'm a fan of you guys too, so please hit me up and I will 100% follow back. I'm not that kind of guy. Trust me, I will give you a follow back. I got you. There's so much to talk about in the world of women's soccer. It's truly just the best possible time for women's soccer right now. You've got the NWSL. You've got the She Believes Cup, which wrapped up a few weeks ago. The Women's Champions League semifinals. Both were dramatic. There is so much that we got to unpack and discuss. And of course, our interview, our special guest today is Lisa Cole, a technical advisor for the Zambia national team. So you just saw Zambia do what they do at the World Cup. Lisa Cole played a huge role in making that happen. She's been in other countries such as Fiji and a few others to name. She really does an incredible job of kind of being a builder and taking things from scratch and turning them into something great. She's worked with the likes of Barbara Banda, Rachel Kundananji, two players who are now in the NWSL. So if you want to know more about those players, more about her, what she did with Zambia, stay tuned. But first, we get into the She Believes Cup, and naturally a little bit of old news, but I think it still is important to address just how good the United States were when faced with adversity. I think the game against Japan, you give up a goal within about the first minute of the game. That is about as horrible as it can go. And it really goes to show that different teams in the past might have folded. They might not have been able to bounce back in the way that this group did. It's a new group together, right? Of course, there are the familiar faces and the starters who we know and love who were there pretty much every game. But there's an other group of players that are coming in, a younger generation of players that are really starting to come along and look fantastic. Jaden Shaw being one of them. I mean, mature beyond her years, man. Like, she looks like this truly just something special, something that we have not seen before in the women's game to be that good, that young. She's just spectacular. Looking like a veteran already, with her finishes and how she's out there on the pitch. She's been incredible. So keep an eye on Jaden Shaw. Trinity Rodman is stepping up in a big way, providing service and doing all the little things that you know, we haven't seen her do as much of. And now she's really starting to show, hey, I'm the real deal. And there is no denying her, both for club and for country. She's gotten off to an incredible start this season. So keep an eye on Trinity Rodman. But overall, this team, the way that they bounced back, the way that they refused to quit even when trailing, and the fact that they've gone through it multiple times now is incredible. First with Japan, and then of course Canada, as dramatic of a game as you're gonna get, right? We certainly felt like Canada may or may not have been bailed out from a penalty call that really gave them life. And the fact that Canada fought back as well, I think, maybe is what made the game so incredible. But in the shootout, Alyssa Nair, once again, not only is she saving penalties, but she's scoring them. I need you guys to understand just how rare that is for a goalie to be doing what she is doing. It's just absolutely incredible. It's almost like that goal from the World Cup, that penalty goal has just unlocked something. And she's like, I am taking matters into my own hands now, and I'm going to score to not just stop the goals from going in, but I'm going to score too. And I mean, she's just been absolutely incredible, cold-blooded. Really, you can only say so much about what Alyssa Nair is doing, and the fact that she's taking penalties, stepping up and taking on double the pressure shows you nerves of steel, really. I mean, she's truly our version of Captain America at this rate, with what the way that she's carrying herself, the way that she's going about her job as the number one national team goalkeeper. Just, she's setting an incredible standard, and is just, she's already a legend, but what she's doing right now is only adding to her legacy as potentially the best goalkeeper in United States soccer history. And there have been some incredible ones: Brianna Scurry, Hope Solo, and now Alyssa Nair. Nair might be the most rock solid of all three when it is all said and done. So Alyssa Nair, thank you for giving us some incredible moments, because again, she played hero. They won the cup. And again, the biggest thing is that they were tested. This group has been tested. Whereas leading up to the last World Cup and leading up to some of the other competitions, they've almost been too good for their own benefit, to where you aren't really challenged, and you don't really know what you have until it gets tough and until you get punched in the mouth and all of a sudden you have to adapt and adjust on the fly. Whereas Japan hit them and punched them in the first minute, and they came back and won that game. And then same thing with Canada. Canada fought back. They could have folded in that penalty shootout. Trinity missing the penalty. And you're thinking, oh boy, here we go again. But then, as we mentioned, Nair stepping up and getting the job done. So this group, there has to be a ton of optimism going into the Olympics. You know, naturally, 4 years ago, the loss to Canada definitely has to sting. And so I think they're going to be hungry for gold, as they always will be. But this group seems primed to win it based on that Sheep Leaves Cup performance. So keep an eye on them in Paris this summer. All right, we are 5 weeks into the NWSL season, and man, are things starting to take shape? Are they heating up? 27 goals scored. What more could you ask for? I mean, really, to see that kind of goal scoring output shows you the teams are clicking and it's shifting. The identity of the league is shifting. We're starting to see more offenses coming together rather than it being more of a defensive-minded league, which is what it's been in the past. Specifically in Kansas City, you look at what Tabitha Chawinga and Bea Zanerato are doing. Running rampant. Both scored braces. Both are setting the league on fire right now. And you better expect that they are going to pick up more and more points until teams get enough film on them to figure out what it is that they're doing. Part of it is just pure athleticism and speed from Chawinga. Like, she's able to just get in behind defenses. She's just faster than everyone else. But part of it is also Zanerato's ability to get her the ball. And then the way that they get each other the ball, they're just unstoppable. We already told you. I told you Vlatko Andonovski was going to do this. And here it is. Like, they are just absolutely steamrolling teams. If the league doesn't address this soon, they're going to run away with the shield, and it's not even going to be close. The only team that has looked good enough to really compete with them this season, up until this point, again, still 5 games in, a lot of things can change. It is a long season, but right now, the Kansas City Current look like the true title contenders. And look, part of it is that home field advantage, right? We talked about that. It is going to be a fortress for them. And that's key. When you have good home field advantage, you can rely on it, and it sets you up for success because you know you're going to get a certain amount of points in your season that are going to help push you towards the postseason. And so as long as you get just enough points on the road, knowing how good you are at home, right? If you don't perform away from home, then you're not going to get into the playoffs. That makes it very simple, right? If you're really good at home, but you can't do it on the road, you're going to end up a middle of the road team, right? At 500 winning percentage, you're not going to go anywhere. So it's important for a team like Kansas City. Yes, they are great at home, but can they do this on the road as well? If they can, they're going to run away with the Shield without question. The Courage, North Carolina Courage, were in the running with them. But now they just went to Angel City and lost a tough one against the run of play. Claire Emsley was phenomenal, right? The free kick goal and the chip. That second chipped finish really came out of nowhere, came out of nothing. Alyssa Thompson played her through, and that insurance goal was the difference because North Carolina went right back down and scored to make it 2-1, and Angel City holds on for the win. So incredibly pleased to see those fans at BMO Stadium get to see a win because it has not happened often, but it's a big, big win for Angel City at home there. They needed that win to get back on track. Speaking of getting back on track, the Thorns did so as well, beating Houston pretty handily. I think we all saw that coming. I think there was no way they were going to lose another game at home, especially to Houston. The Thorns were off to their worst start ever. Mike Norris was then prompted to move to now a technical role as they look for a new head coach. So things definitely in limbo, but they got a big, big, big result at home over Houston. And then that gives us the perfect transition into Maria Sanchez, who is now headed to San Diego, a blockbuster move. It's kind of crazy that she requested the trade right after she signed one of the biggest deals in league history. Now the Wave are going to have to take on that contract, and now we're going to start to get into a lot of the salary cap and how teams are built and constructed. Where are the Wave going to get this money from to be able to pay her? It might work out on the books for this year, but going forward, it might be a one-year rental. It might be a long-term deal, but they're going to have some decisions to make this offseason. That's the Wave. They're really going to have to, because they've got a lot of money on the books between some of the stars that they've signed, the contracts that they have. Maria Sanchez is an incredible addition and definitely keeps the Wave in the title contention hunt. Obviously, they are outside of the playoff spots right now through five games. I think they will get that sorted out. I think they will be fine. But Maria Sanchez, the addition of her is huge for them, and she really gives the Wave an added layer of attack offensively that they really didn't have before. That type of dynamic player who can create something out of nothing. A type of player who can get Alex Morgan service. So it's a great, great move for San Diego. And I think people were surprised that Angel City didn't make the move because of the LA to Mexico connection, even though San Diego is also just as connected, right? But I feel like there is a little more of a Mexican influence and culture in Los Angeles. So I think a lot of people were surprised from what you saw on Twitter that they didn't put the move in. But then you immediately see, prior to Angel City's last game this weekend, Paige Nielsen and Amandine Henri both gone. Nielsen to Houston and Henri to Utah for essentially allocation money. Basically, Angel City are broke and don't have any money because they just let two starters who are pretty important to the team go for peanuts. Like, I mean, yes, that money is going to be worth something, but the fact that we couldn't even make a move for a younger prospect or a younger player as well as part of the deal, right? Like, so say, you know, maybe Henri and maybe one of the Wave's like project players or someone who they signed as a undrafted free agent, someone like that who we can take a chance on and maybe develop ourselves. That option was there. They weren't able to get that going. So basically Angel City seemingly have money troubles and had to do this because those are two key players. And yes, they did get a win against the run of play against North Carolina to get that 2-1 win is huge. But going forward, unless they get Junendo back soon, unless they can get Kristen Press back, there are going to be harder times coming for this team. And it pains me. It kills me to say that because I'm a season ticket holder. I'm a fan just like you guys in certain aspects. Obviously, I'm going to try to keep it as objective as I possibly can. I'm not trying to be biased, but I'm just saying Angel City giving up two starters for just money and not really getting anything back. I understand they want to free things up for the cap, but there's also the need to compete. And so, look, this is a good opportunity to see how Angel City develops their younger players. If their younger players are able to take a step up right away and fill those spots, sure, it works out. But if not, you're going to see this team struggle to create chances in the same way where Claire Emsley is the one literally doing everything in attack for them. As you saw in the North Carolina game, if she's not there, do we realistically think Angel City wins that game? I don't think so. So Angel City for now is in a good spot, but we will see where they end up going forward. Earlier we mentioned Trinity Rodman and how great she's been, but Croy Bethune is everything that we thought she would be. I gotta admit, I was dead wrong about the Spirit in terms of their playoff chances and how much of a title contender they were going to be. I didn't think that based on what we'd seen the last few years, but it turns out that that Ashley Sanchez trade and getting Croy Bethune in, it seems to be the missing piece. Like, this is what this team was missing. And you remember the runs that they would go on where they couldn't win a game. It's just draw after draw after draw after draw. That happens because you can't score enough goals when it matters most, or you can't hold on to the lead when it matters most. Now you're starting to see them really, really do it on both ends of the field. A dominant 2-0 victory over Gotham, who came to town. I think people were expecting a lot more from Gotham. They've been a traditionally good, like decent enough on the road the last few seasons when you look at the records, and I was definitely expecting more from them. But the Washington Spirit are for real, man. And Croy Bethune is the surefire front runner for Rookie of the Year right now. I don't think there's any question about that. So keep an eye on Croy, because this is just her third goal already. She's only going to add to that. The Spirit are for real. That's just a fact. I think moving on to Louisville, I think they're also going to be in the mix. Like we mentioned with Kansas City having a great home field advantage, Louisville has the same at Lynn Family Stadium. That place is a fortress, and they won again, scoring 5 goals as well. That offense with Ryland Turner is clearly looking like it's going to be a problem. Turner scored her first goal. DeMello added a brace. Ochenokanu scored. Basically, everything is clicking on all cylinders right now. Bev Yanez, the way that she has got this team playing together, and it's a young group, they look good. They're looking like a team that really is going to be in the mix to contend. Do they have the depth long term to make it work for the entire season? We will see, but this is the kind of start that they would have hoped to have had. The same thing can be said for Orlando. Another surprise. I mean, I did say in the preview that I do believe they were going to take a step up. Seb Hines has been building something here, and now they're starting to get goal scoring from places that they could not have expected. Summer Yates was a goal scorer at the University of Washington, one of the best players in the Pac-12 coming out of college, but now she's starting to take her chances in and around the box. This is her, you know, second goal in as many games. She's looking really good, like the kind of player who can consistently score if you give her opportunities in the box, which is only going to open things up for everyone else. So Yates's development is going to be interesting, because again, anytime you beat the wave and you're at home, like that's always a big win, and these are the types of results you have to get if you want to make the postseason. The standings really look like flipped from what you would have normally expected between the Rain, the Thorns, and the Wave, all at the playoff spots, and the Spirit, the Pride, Louisville, all looking great right now. Kansas City, and even Chicago. Chicago, we cannot forget about what they just did. Mallory Swanson might be even faster coming back from this injury. It is incredible watching just how afraid teams are of her, because they go to Seattle, okay, a place where they have traditionally not done all that well. I believe, you know, only maybe two or three wins and a handful of tries. Like, it's a tough place to go and win. And what do they do in the first 5 minutes? They scored an incredible counterattacking goal. And watching it in real time was just stunning to me, because Mallory Pugh had the ball, and the second it looks like she's about to go 1v1 with one of the Rain defenders, Lauren Barnes immediately pulls in and kind of cheats away from Allie Schlegel in order to cover and provide help for Swanson. So I understand that's the game plan. Okay, you want Allie Schlegel and the rest of the Red Stars to beat you. You don't want to lose because Mallory Swanson. But by cheating over as far as she did, Lauren Barnes went way too far over, because that's the respect that Mallory Swanson demands. Swanson plays a ball into Schlegel, where it pretty much ends up right around the middle of the box. It's a great angle for her. It was too easy. It was literally too easy watching that. Allie Schlegel will take that all day long. And I understand the fear that Mallory Swanson strikes into opposing defenses, but that's not going to cut it if you're Seattle. They are not getting any younger as a roster. You have Ziara King, you have Bethany Balser, and a few other players, but that is an aging group of players, and this time might be starting to catch up with them, because you look at Huerta and Fishlock, they just look drained. And Ji So Yoon is an incredible player, but she is also not playing at her prime and hasn't developed the chemistry yet. So it's going to take some time. The Rain put the most amount of crosses into the box in the league and convert the least, and that's not going to cut it. And now Megan Rapinoe's gone, so the quality of those crosses is going to go down. So the Rain need to fix their strategy. They need to do something, because this whole putting crosses into the box thing, it's not working. It's this, like, literally, they end up in the same boat. The last year and a half, it's been the same. They start games off slow. The underdog team scores a goal or two on them. Then the Rain spend the rest of the game in the other team's half, possessing the ball, trying to break them down and scoring. And that's it, because they haven't done enough to actually create quality chances in front of goal. It's just cross after cross after cross into the box. They can make up this deficit. They can turn it around. Laurel Harvey's an incredible coach, but this whole strategy of just crossing the ball, they got to figure something else out, for real. They really, really do. Alrighty, thank you for hearing all my rants about the NWSL. I could do that all day, but it is time for our interview with Lisa Cole, again, from the United Soccer Coaches Convention, so forgive us for the background noise. But again, this is a great interview. She's worked with the Zambia national team, Barbara Banda, who just signed with Orlando, Rachel Quintanaji, who just signed with Bay FC. She goes into really what has inspired her to take on the roles that she's taken on, and what she's been able to do with that, and how she's been able to change the fortunes of so many countries who may not have gotten that opportunity before. Really, really awesome talk with her. Here it is, guys. Enjoy. We are with Lisa Cole, who is currently a technical advisor with the Zambia national team, but is a legend within the space of women's soccer.
We're so excited to have you on, Lisa. How are you, and how are you enjoying the convention?
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I love coming to the convention every year. I learn something, get to share, and meet so many great people. And thanks for having me on. I'm excited. There's been a couple times I've been watching your work and what you guys are doing. So, yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. And you spent a lot of time coaching in America first before taking your talents abroad internationally. What made you want to join and take on a project like Zambia after being at Antigua Barbuda in Fiji?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you get a call to take a country to a World Cup, I think it's a hard thing to turn down. I've always enjoyed going and working in countries where you not only get to improve the team in the moment and have that assignment, like the task of a World Cup or building a women's league in Antigua and really setting the infrastructure, traveling to Fiji, you're getting to do something really remarkable and maybe bring something that can stay and be sustainable. So for me, it was like a no-brainer to go and, yeah, let's go to the World Cup and figure out how I can help. They had obviously had a lot of success getting themselves there, but they also were missing in some areas of like performance development and how to train properly, periodization, things like that. So yeah, let me go share and then hopefully it sticks and it stays with them.
And what was it like for you to be a part of Zambia getting to this World Cup? Obviously it's historic, it's a huge deal. What was it like to be involved for you?
Yeah, well, they did the hard work. They got there first. I actually didn't join the team until June 5th. So our first game was July 22nd. So I really had to pick and choose what was like going to be a priority. These are the things we can right away change and implement. I wish I'd gotten more time with the team, to be honest, and with the staff, because there's a ton of potential there. But yeah, we made some quick gains and we organized ourselves a bit better, so we didn't give up quite as many goals. And there's so much incredible talent there that we were able to school. We were dangerous in every game. So I think that was the neat thing, is to go on the journey with them, get to learn a new culture, and get to be a part of some remarkable people's lives.
And did you get a chance at all to interact with Barbara Banda and just... How special of a player is she? What does she mean to the country of Zambia?
Yeah, it's funny. Barbara Banda, obviously a star, and I ran all the training sessions, so I was interacting with the team very often, having great conversations. She's actually a world talent. I'm a little bit upset that she's in China, because I think her brand would blow up if she was in Europe or in the U.S., but she likes it there, and they've been loyal to her, and I think she's repaying back that loyalty, and I think her transfer fee is very high, so unfortunately she's going to be there for a while. But yeah, the world needs to go and capture those games, because she's a world talent. She does things that people can't do. Having said that, Rachel Kenjanunji, who's playing in Madrid FC, is a fantastic player, was the leading scorer in the Spanish league. So you think of all the Barcelona stars. Nope, who's the leading scorer? It's Rachel. And the best player we have actually in our team is in neither of those two players. It was Grace Chanda. And Grace, unfortunately, ended up having an illness during the World Cup, so she didn't get to play in the World Cup. But she was a huge part of our success leading up to the World Cup. Our captain, Barbara's a little bit the captain on the field, but Grace is the one really leading. And I hope that the world gets to see her play in their future games, because I was so impressed with her. And then there's so much young talent in that team as well. They just need an opportunity.
Yeah. And do you feel as though African nations have done enough to provide those opportunities, or what more can be done to help to make sure that, you know, those players do get those chances?
Well, I think the World Cup expanding to more teams, I think some people were worried, oh, the level's going to drop or whatever. But really what happened is teams like Zambia then put in the investment. So if I'm investing in my women's program for longer over the course of the 4 years leading up to the World Cup, then you're gonna see more African countries, more countries in OFC, more countries in the Asian countries invest. Because if I never get to the big stage, then how do I know to perform on the big stage? We all know we get better from experiences. So providing them with this experience and the opportunity to make this has been huge for the women's game across the world. And so many teams have caught up, right? The gap between first and we were 77, so ranked in the country when we entered the World Cup. The gap between 1 and 77 is not as big as it used to be.
How do you think the women's game is perceived in other countries compared to how it is in America, having seen it firsthand?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things. So when I was initially in 2016, I was with Papua New Guinea, and women still, there's still a bride prize for them. Like, you're still trading women as a commodity for cows and chickens, and in their culture, women are still seen as just mothers and sisters and wives. So we really got to change that perception that, hey, look, not just our team, but when Papua New Guineans got to see the U.S. and Japan, some French players are like, oh my goodness, like, look at how well women can play. Yeah, women can do anything as long as they're given the opportunity. And so that's been fun to see in Fiji. It's been fun to see in Antigua, and certainly in Zambia. People are realizing, oh wow, women, if they invest in, we invest in them, they can actually earn a living and now even be providers. Barbara is doing some remarkable things with her earnings in her country, so she's coming back and giving back. Those were opportunities were only afforded men not that long ago. So yeah, that women can take control of their destiny.
That's amazing. No, I love that answer. How challenging is it to try and build something from the ground up at this, at such a big level, at such a big scale? Because it's easy to just say, right? And you've done it in multiple places. So talk us through how tough that is.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is to, you have some general ideas, but the first thing I think that's really important, and I had to learn this, is to go in and first observe. Take in what do they have? What are their strengths already? Do an assessment. What are things that are great? What are things that are pretty good and we can hold off on changing? What are some things that we need to implement because they're actually a hindrance to the program? And what those things are different in each country. So you need to stand back and kind of take a look and see, okay, what are the low-hanging fruit that I can change right away? That builds trust in them because they see right away, oh, the benefit of listening and the benefit of changing. And then you can tackle the bigger things that are holding them back. So the first thing is always to start with trust and make sure they know you're there for their best interests, that you care about them. And you're going to care about them later. I'm still in touch with the players from Papua New Guinea. With the World Cup being in Australia, I saw a bunch of my Fijian players while I was there. So that the relationship isn't like contractual, but the relationship is as long as they want to keep interacting and developing, they can call and I'll still be investing.
Amazing. And what would you say, if you have any advice to all the women out there who are looking to get into coaching, because we definitely are, we need more women in coaching.
Yeah. Don't wait till you feel like you're ready. You have to get pushed. I was lucky to have Tony DiCicco as my mentor. Dr. Colleen Hacker was my college coach. And I think they did a good job of balancing, making sure I wasn't overconfident and cocky as a young coach, but also like pushing me in front. So because again, I think everybody develops through their experiences. So if I'm always sitting second chair, and I'm going to get really good at that, but I have to put myself in front sometimes. So especially like coaches that are college assistants, I really encourage them, go and find a youth team, coach a local youth team, even if it's a rec team. So you're the one having to decide the lineups, decide this, decide that, and getting comfortable with being a leader, because it's not just about the football. It's about being a good leader and being able to stand up front and be willing to fail. That's what happens when you go to the pro game. Sometimes I'm the best coach in the world, and sometimes I'm the worst coach in the world. And so you have to develop a bit of thick skin. So you have to find your way through that a bit. But yeah, take a risk on yourself. Bet on yourself.
Again, that was Lisa Cole, one of the technical advisors for the Zambia national team, and just a wealth of of knowledge and wisdom and experience. She's been in the game for such a long time, and before anyone even, when it was a wild, wild west, when it was a new frontier, she's been in the game since then. So a true pioneer, someone who we really enjoyed getting the chance to speak with. That honestly, that interview was years in the making, guys. Like, we were supposed to talk to her like 2-3 years ago, and she just got so busy with everything else that we had to throw it on the back burner. And then lo and behold, at the convention, out of nowhere, was not planned, we said, hey, we would love to speak with you for 10 to 15 minutes, and boom, there you go. It's funny how life is like that, guys. Sometimes, whatever you want to call it, fate, the universe, however you want to look at it in your head, everything happens at the right time when it is meant to happen. Okay, some people don't buy that. I believe in it. Like, how else does an interview like this just happen when we'd had it 2-3 years ago on the books? Didn't seem like it was ever going to happen. And then boom, out of the blue, opportunity just presents itself. Years go by. So you never know, man. Life's a crazy thing, man. Grateful for that interview. All right, we shift our focus to Europe because, again, there was a lot of crazy stuff going on there too, man. We cannot forget about just how diverse this world of women's soccer is, the different teams, the different styles, the different cultures. We are here to bring it all to you. I think we first start with Lauren James, kind of been the talk of the town. And again, this is a sensitive subject because Lauren James has been the subject of quite a lot of online abuse. And we can get into race and talk about how, you know, because she's black, she probably gets way more flack than some of the other players do. And a good example of that is Millie Turner, right? Manchester United upset Chelsea in the FA Cup semifinals to advance. But there was a moment where Millie Turner, again, a former teammate of hers, Lauren James used to play for Manchester United. Millie Turner put out a picture after the game. One of the pictures she put was of Lauren James putting her in a headlock when she was trying to get the ball back from her to try and tie the game. So you understand, right? Things get physical, and especially when you have the player, one player who's holding the ball so that you can't go as fast, and they're playing keep away with you, keeping the ball away from you. It's really child's play, but that's literally what we do out on the pitch. That's just how it is. Footballers are also children. Like, you can take the ball away, hold it from them, and then they got to put you in a headlock or tackle you in order to get it back. But either way, that image circulated, and I think that prompted Lauren James to unfollow Turner and Ella Toon, who is, again, a very prominent England player, right? So no longer following them. Serena Weigman entered the convo and said, really, it's out of her control. She's not going to focus on that stuff. But I think we all know, especially with the younger generation, just how important social media is. And while most won't look into that too deeply, I think making the decision to unfollow somebody, I think, is a pretty clear indication of something happened, or she's just not feeling good about what happened. And if Lauren James, look, part of it is she going to be able to clean this reputation of hers up, right? It's just, she has set herself so far behind the eight ball, because you're looking at two different incidents. And even if Michelle Alozi and Leah Walty have both said, we forgive her, that does not mean that the public is going to forget about it. I think you need to understand that. People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will always remember how they made you feel. Maya Angelou. And so people are naturally upset, very upset by what Lauren James made them feel. Again, that behavior is not acceptable, but the people who she committed those acts on have said it's okay. The thing is, it's like Lauren James has to be squeaky clean, essentially, for the rest of her career. Because if she has one more dust up like this, if she has one more incident that paints her as a dirty player, I'm not saying she is, but when it happens to you three times, right, whether it's competitiveness, like I understand, right, we're all fans of the game. We've all seen what Luis Suarez used to do, right? An incredibly brilliant player who also used to bite. Part of that is out of just wanting to win so badly that you would literally do anything in your power to do it. So, like, he committed that blatant handball in that World Cup game against Ghana. Then the bite, like, he did so much. He cared about it so much. And I think, you know, that's something that's probably within Lauren James as well. She's just an ultra competitor, right? You grew up in the James family with Reece James as your brother. Like, you're going to grow up competing. And it's that level of competition that's helped get Lauren James to where she's at. So I understand the reasons behind her acting out. But at the same time, if it happens again, the reputation of her being a dirty player is, it's sunken in. It's like it's etched in the unofficial history books forever for the fans. Her legacy, how she will be remembered, completely changes from being one of the best young players in the world to one of the best young players who has anger issues and is a dirty player and can't control herself. And I wish it was different. I wish it could be another way. I wish there was a way to where it didn't have to be this way. But that is ultimately just how it is. That third strike, if it happens again, I don't want to be around to see what's going to happen, because she's going to get abused to no end over, again, she at some point does have to get better at controlling her emotions and controlling her temper in the moment. But I also worry for her. I am afraid. I'm very afraid if it happens again, she could be in trouble. In spite of that, in spite of everything that was going on, they managed to get a result against Barcelona, their arch rival, who they have not been able to get past. They have not been able to do it. And this time, at least in the first leg, you get a 1-0 win. But again, amidst all the drama, they were able to do that. Credit Emma Hayes, credit the group for shutting them out. I mean, that's something that obviously does not happen very often, to shut out a Barcelona team that just passes you to death and creates so many mismatches and gets you into areas of the pitch that you don't want to be at, and they really just pick you apart. So incredible job by Chelsea to come away with the result, but can they do it over two legs? That's the big question. The biggest game, though, Lyon PSG, the two French giants, kind of like big sister versus little sister. You had Lyon, they're the giants. They are the ultimate winners of the champ. They have the most Champions League, the most French League titles. They are the giants of women's football. And then you have PSG that are trying to supplant them and take their spot. And for a brief moment, albeit a slight bit of luck on both the goals, Marie-Antoinette Katoto was on point with her finishing. Even if the first goal had a bit of a deflection and the ball landed in her path, she took her chance well. Same with the second one. Ball kind of bounced around the box. Again, this second one was more on Lyon for not clearing it, but still, Katoto took her chance well. 2-0 up, you're thinking, what is going on? PSG might have done enough here to steal this. And then with less than 20 minutes to go, Lyon pull off one of the most incredible comebacks you will ever see in Champions League history, men's or women's. I swear, to overcome a two-goal deficit and score three in the fashion that they did. Oh my God. First off, you had Kadiatou Diagne scoring against her former team, which was incredible to get them back in the game. Then Melchie de Mornay, the Haitian sensation, has lived up to the billing in terms of the Lyon signing. A brilliant fake to create the space for her shot, which she whipped into the top corner, same side as the goalie. Incredible finish to tie it up, and just when you thought it was over, Amel Madjary with a bit of class, a bit of composure, right when you needed it the most, coming down on the left side of the box, fading away, falling away, is able to get just enough on the shot and put it just wide of the keeper as it slowly rolled in off the post and in. I mean, come on, man. It really, as dramatic of a game as you will see. And so if you haven't gotten the chance to watch the highlights, go back and watch it, because, oh man, did that live up to the hype. What an incredible, incredible game. Alrighty, that is all that we have for you today on episode 72 of Give and Go. I'm your host, Rotas Wadera, and thank you so, so much for making the choice to listen to us at Girls Soccer Network. For more on the latest and greatest from the world of women's soccer, go to www.girlsoccernetwork.com. Check us out on Twitter, at Girls Soccer Net, on Instagram, at Girls Soccer Network. Check me out on Instagram, at RowanDatas25. RowinDatas25, or on Twitter at RowanDatas25. Same handle, same everything. Again, blessed to be able to continually do this with you guys. This has been a blast, and we're excited to continue to talk about the incredible world of women's soccer as it just continues to expand and explode and go to even greater heights. It's truly, truly a blessing. So thank you guys. We will be back soon. Peace out.